it leads to a point where we're going to have a machine that's going to feed us knowledge that we ourselves...
That we don't know.
That we don't know. Crazy world.
That's almost godlike.
That's almost godlike.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week on Sand Hill Road, Berkeley Skydeck's Chontang.
We've always lived in a human-centered world. What will it be when we're no longer the center? What will it be when the best poets and writers and actors and scientists are not human?
A note for our listeners, while we will talk a little later in the podcast about Berkeley Skydeck's unique program combining venture money, an incubator, and Cal Berkeley, we've covered that ground previously with Skydeck's Caroline Winette in a previous episode. Well, introduce yourself. Who are you?
Okay. I am Chan Tang. I'm the managing partner of the Berkeley Skydeck Fund.
Chan is a big thinker about AI, writing, and I'm quoting him here, "Will there be a substantial percentage of humans that will be inferior to machines when it comes to creating economic value?" Chan says we're diving headfirst into a deeply uncertain future.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And I will say that my thoughts on AI and the impact on society and humanity is evolving quickly. I will say that up till about a month or two ago, I was pretty complacent, pretty comfortable. Even when ChatGPT came out and all the parents and the teachers were concerned about how are we going to teach the kids anymore, what was going through my head was, I can't wait to show this to my kids because I think it's going to make their lives a lot easier and it's going to impact them. And I don't think this is a bad thing. It's another tool in the toolbox. But about a month ago, I started to get nervous.
And let me just break in for a second and say, that speaks to how big this is. That I was thinking about the future of humanity, and my opinion on it has changed over the last 30 days. That's how fast this is moving, and that's how big a deal this is.
That's exactly right. And you know, in the beginning, when I started to have some of these, I'll call it darker thoughts, and then I started to talk to some people who are very well informed, who I thought they'll calm me down, right? They'll come back and say, "No, Chan, you're overthinking it. We're too far." I'm talking about founders, researchers, faculty at Berkeley, and quite honestly, not all of them feel the same way about this. It's a very, again, quickly evolving field, but enough of them came back and said, "Yeah, John, I'm also worried." You know, some of them said concerned/scared.
Mm-hmm.
That it made me kind of go like, "Okay, all right, now I'm not alone." And it's really time to sort of extrapolate where these things are going to take us. And it takes us in some interesting directions.
If there's a giant paradigm shift, it's hard to extrapolate much of anything, isn't it?
That's correct. You know, we're struggling with the right way of thinking about this. So again, 2-3 months ago, the way that investors and founders tended to think about this was, okay, cool. We're now on a new shift in tech. We're now talking about, we think about 15 years ago when we first had that shift from desktop to mobile. That mm-hmm. was a big moment. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of companies like Instagram and Uber and DoorDash that would not exist if we did not go from desktop to mobile. So we thought, okay, this is the next one. We're going to create perhaps a dozen of massively new, exciting companies, and our lives will be marginally improved. Since then, in the last month, I've come to the conclusion that this is at least as exciting as the invention of the transistor. And I've had people go, and I thought maybe it's as big as the invention of the internal combustion engine. So these are all huge, huge transitions in our life. I've had people go even further back. I've had people say to me, I think it's as significant as the invention of fire. I had someone else say it's as significant as, not the invention, but the ability for life to see. It was equivalent to the, the evolution of eyesight.
Let's pick apart a couple of those, because I do like the cell phone analogy in that I think it sort of underestimates how important AI is. But if you were explaining to someone just as recently as 1990 what the world looked like when we all had a device in our pocket that made us available at any moment, and had the entire world's knowledge inside of it, you would say you can't imagine what it's like in 2023. First of all, you walk into any waiting room or, you know, airport waiting room, that kind of thing. Everybody's looking at these devices. You go to any concert, they're holding them up and recording. Our behavior changed around them in so many different ways. I think that's a pretty good analogy, that you can't explain it to someone who hasn't picked up a cell phone what the cell phone world looks like. But it does seem like it's underestimating it a bit.
I think that's right. I think so. When you think about, you're right, we can't understate how significant that transition to mobile was. There are an awful lot of investors and founders that have made fortunes in that process, and quite a few companies that have died because they failed to make that transition effectively. But I think the difference is, I mean, fundamentally, when I think about the transition to mobile, it was somewhat gradual and it was somewhat predictable. I mean, you're right, in 1990, we would have had a hard time imagining Tinder and Uber and DoorDash, right? That's a foreign concept to us. But if you go back, let's say, 5 years ago, you know, before, or perhaps 5 years is not quite enough, let's say 10 years ago, could we have predicted that these apps would exist? Probably. And even in 2002, go by 10 years prior to that, could we have somewhat guessed at what would come in 2012? I would say yes. I mean, we didn't know which company would do it. But if you remember back in 2000, we had the Palm Pilot back in the 90s.
Right. I had one. I had one. Yeah. Don't let the batteries run out.
So we had already had hints and glimpses of the future even back then. These weren't quite good enough. I think this is more fundamental because it opens up. It's happening so quickly. That's the first thing that I want to say. The speed at which the improvement is coming is remarkable. That word is not strong enough.
Right.
And then at the same time, it's hard to see where this could lead. So I'll give you one example. So I was talking to, so as you are probably aware, we're now in GPT-4.
Right.
So GPT-3 was launched last year. GPT-3.5 was the basis of our chat GPT, which came out last fall. GPT-4 was finally made available to consumers last month. We know that GPT-5 is coming in 6 months or so. And after that, there'll be 6 and 7 and 8 and beyond. When I talk to some of those same peers that I talked about, we like speculate where 5 and 6 could be. We talk about, is there a possibility, and I know this is going to sound extreme, but I think it's worth thinking about the extremes here. We could be inventing our own God.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but it's not inconceivable. We could very possibly think about what scientists do now. They read all of the current papers that their peers have written. They think about facts about our world and our universe. They come up with a thesis about a theory about what what series of facts that have not been explained by what we know now, and they postulate something, and they go off and they run experiments, and they try to either confirm their theories or not. What happens when GPT-5 comes out, perhaps in 6 months, and is able to do exactly the same thing, postulate a theory that we don't yet have, that our scientists don't currently have, based on the facts as we know it, suggest experiments that we can then do, and where does that lead? You know, it leads to a point where we're going to have a machine that's going to feed us knowledge that we ourselves—
That we don't know.
That we don't know. Crazy world.
That's almost godlike.
That's almost godlike.
What happens to the people? I was talking to Bill Davidow, and he called them people of zero economic value. And he didn't mean it as an insult, right? It's a factually true thing. The radiologist who's not as fast as the computer and not as accurate as the computer someday. And Bill asked, what do we have to do to live meaningful lives?
And we're going to have to grapple with that question.
I think that's exactly right. Now, I will say again, my opinions on this are somewhat evolving. So if I could give you sort of the short-term view as well as the long-term view. The short-term view is, yes, disruption is happening, but I think on the short term, it'll be positive for humanity and for consumers. And as consumers, we're all going to benefit. We can just think about all the services that cost a lot of money and realize that it's going to become a lot cheaper. So that's exciting. But on the medium to long term, I do question that, right? And, you know, people have said, hey, when we made that transition because of the internal combustion engine, and now we don't need to work in the fields anymore, well, that was okay. So what's so bad about the upcoming transition? Maybe we'll just move from being—
Right. They've always worried about the steam engine and the whatnot. It'll be fine.
We'll just find something else that we're better at. I think that we have to ask the question, because for 10 to 20% of the population, and we can have a deeper dive on, is it 20% or 50%, but for some percentage of the population, they'll be better than the AI in some aspects, and they will have a role, and they'll be perhaps even more wealthy or economically efficient and have a higher value, because now they have an AI to boost them. Mm-hmm. But for the 50%, that perhaps don't have a single skill that is superior to the AI, we have to ask the question. If we live in a society where you're compensated based on the economic value that you create through your work, what then?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
It is fascinating now because I had a conversation with two fellas just, you know, over a Scotch whiskey or something, which ChatGPT came up, and one of them was so excited. He's a sales guy, you know, I'm going to use it to do this. The other one, very bright human being, had never heard of it. And I remember back, this is such a terrible analogy, but it works in my head. I remember back to probably the early 90s, and I was sitting in a hotel bar with my wife in Washington, D.C., and we were talking with some other couple. And they were talking about how expensive the hotel was. And I said, you don't use Priceline? And they said, what is Priceline? I said, it's on the internet. And they said, oh, we haven't seen the internet yet. We don't have the internet. And it was one of those where, of course, I had paid far less for the hotel, obviously, where there was a moment in time in which some of us were using the internet every day to do amazing things. And the other half was like, oh yeah, no, I haven't tried that out yet. And we're sort of, and it may be only this, a very short period of time, might be 6 weeks, I don't know, in which there are those people out there that have never logged on to ChatGPT or similar, and those of us who use it kind of every day.
Yeah, I encourage everyone to explore, to experiment with it, and really to think through those questions of how is this going to affect my career and how is it going to affect my kids' careers. I think it's a question that is beholden on us to try to answer now. What I will also say is that I'm not sure a head start is going to help a whole lot. I think change is coming for all of us in every single one of our careers. I'll give you a concrete example of what it might look like. So one fact that people have observed with some concern is that a lot of companies, the CEO, the management team, now makes significantly more than the people who work on the front lines, right? Contrast that to where things were perhaps 200 years ago, where, sure, the person who was, the head of the construction firm versus the folks who actually had to swing a hammer, there was a price gap there, but I don't think it was that dramatic. Well, when AI becomes widespread, and I think we're only a matter of perhaps months, but certainly no more than a few years away, I think that gap is going to be even more substantial. Now we're talking about a future where the management team can accumulate even more wealth.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
So imagine a world where it's not a 100x, which I think most of us already
feel outrageous already.
Uncomfortable
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
Imagine when it's 10,000x.
And you can make the workers more efficient and have fewer of them.
That's exactly right.
So I asked GPT-4 for a question to ask you.
Oh, boy.
And so it responded, asking good questions to a venture capitalist like Sean. I have some grammar issues about asking two, but anyway, can help you gain insights into the venture capital industry and the strategies and philosophies that guide their investment decisions. I think that's a terrible question. It goes on, what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs who yada, 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 yada? Terrible question. I'd rather ask you about your first job. You were a paperboy.
I was a paperboy. That's right.
So that's up early. I mean, for those listeners who have no idea what a paperboy is.
Is that really true? Oh, man, I feel old now. Yeah.
That is up early. What age?
I was in seventh grade. So what would that have been? 11?
Yeah.
11,
yeah,
12?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And up at what, 4 a.m.?
Well, so I used to do the Sunday Chronicle.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
And if you remember that, I mean, the Sunday Chronicle.
Heavy as hell. Oh,
it was
in the day.
I mean, if you guys have, I'm sure you've seen certainly the pictures of the paper boys with their pouches,
yeah,
front and back.
For sure.
I could carry four. You know what I mean? It was that big. So I would have to make multiple runs where I would drop off four, go back and get more. And my parents were lovely and so supportive. And they would actually, because we had to get the paper at like you know, maybe 4 or 5. Because it had to be on people's doors
right.
by 7, you know?
Right.
Sunday morning, everybody wants to read their paper. And they would help me fold and help me, you know, put it into the pouch. But yeah, it was a really good experience.
So what did you do? That's big money at 11. I mean, that's a well-paying job. Well, it's about the only job an 11-year-old can do. What'd you do with the money?
I really honestly don't remember. I was a pretty good kid. I mean, I collected comic books. I think there's a decent chance that significant amount went in that direction. I will tell you one thing that I learned in that process. I did not get good at it, but I came to recognize, man, I am weak at this. It was the part when you go collect money from the people that you send papers. Because, I mean, now I know, or I learned from some of my peers, that's when you earn the big bucks. The reason you do that in person is because this is where you get your tips, right? And I am embarrassed as heck to knock on some stranger's door and be like, you owe me money, right? As an 11. So I was horrible. I'd be like, here's your bill. Thank you very much, right? So that was a lesson. I was like, okay, I need to learn how to be better at selling. And although I am certainly curious how AI is going to change that world too.
Well, the whole world has changed because I feel like I have to explain to the young listener that you didn't pay the bill to the San Francisco Chronicle. The paper boy came around and got the money for the San Francisco Chronicle.
I really think that they did that because it was a way to supplement your wages.
Oh, it makes total sense.
Right.
Oh, it makes total sense. But yes, you're right. It's hard as a young person to demand money of an adult. So at some point, you moved to China.
Mm-hmm.
What age is that?
Well, so, I mean, we've lived in China off and on over the last decade or so. So we did it when my kids were like 5 or 6. We wanted them to work on their Mandarin, which it has not been super successful, unfortunately. And at some point, they're going
to
hear.
Is it frustrating when people speak English to them? You're like, we moved all the way over here.
For sure. Well, I mean, and we have 3 kids. So they speak to each other primarily in English. So that's a constant struggle. It was like, come on. You know how hard this was? Just pretend for me. Pretend. And then the last few years, and then so that was a while ago. That was like a decade plus. And then about 2 years ago, with COVID starting to be a major factor, of course, around the world. But our kids were dealing with the uncertain schooling situation.
Sure.
And what we knew was that in China it was quite different. So back in 2020, it made sense to put them in international school in China. And then now that my daughter is of an age where she's thinking about college and all of that, it's hard to transition her now. But as she applies for college, of course, that will change because she will be going. We expect and we hope that she will be going to college here in the U.S.
As someone who has straddled both worlds, then what are we to make of the suspicion of Chinese companies like ByteDance? I get the concern. I keep waiting for Washington to give me some concrete example of where, you know, they did something wrong. Where do you stand on ByteDance?
I think the suspicion is actually pretty easy to understand because it's the same suspicion that I hear in China when it comes to U.S. companies.
Sure.
So in that sense, the sentiment is the same. What I think is really unique or is unfortunate about what I'm hearing on the U.S. side is sort of the opposing voice. The idea that, yes, there are justified concerns about data and influence. These are perfectly fair concerns. What are we giving up by having a concrete ban? Like, where does that end, right? Where are we just completely saying that regardless of what consumer advances, what technology advances come from China, and there is quite a bit of it, we're going to say no to it just because.
Well, and that's the thing, right, is that the idea of banning TikTok is that it is that ByteDance would communicate with the Chinese Communist Party, that there is some ownership there, that ByteDance wouldn't have any choice but to turn over data. But that would be true of any Chinese app. There's nothing unique about TikTok. The next big app that comes out of China, we would have to say the same thing, to be fair.
I think that's right. I think the better question to ask is, how do we defend data? How do we prevent influence? And banning a corporation is not the answer, right? I mean, what precludes, and I'm not really going to throw out any names, but even an American-owned company, let's say that they have an offer for a massive commercial deal in China, but it comes with, we want access to consumer data in the U.S. Well, technically, that's legal, right? Isn't that the primary concern rather than ownership? So I think it's the better debate on the policy side should be, how do we protect data? How do we avoid influence? That applies to TikTok, to Twitter, to Facebook, and whatever comes next.
And let's finish up with your work at Cal. And again, I'll remind the listener that if they want a lot of information about Skydeck, we have done that in the past. But what sort of companies are you seeing apply? I assume AI is going to be one of the one. I don't want to call it a trend because of, you know, that's not fair to the people who work so hard on their company. But I assume quite a few of them are AI.
That is a safe guess. So for sure. So we are seeing, with the macro environment being what it is, obviously it's been down. With venture being somewhat down, the deal flow for us is better than ever. We had a record number of companies apply. And I would say the caliber of the companies that we are seeing is just amazing, remarkable. These are companies that will absolutely change the world in the upcoming years. In terms of the fields that they are going into, we still see some of the stuff that we always want to see, sustainability, robotics, etc. But the biggest sort of up and rising segment is without a doubt what's happening with ChatGPT and AI. I think this goes back to the question that GPT-4 tried to ask me. And no one's going to shed a tear for us. But for VCs, it's actually very hard to figure out how to place an investment in this category. Despite what I just told you about how significant all of this is going to be on society, if I put on my VC hat and go, okay, how am I going to make money? How am I going to pick a company where my investment is going to do extremely well in? That's actually not that clear. I go back to the dot-com era. You remember the browser wars.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real question of Netscape, Internet Explorer, who's going to win? And it felt like whoever won that battle would own the internet. That's why they fought so hard for it. 20 years later,
it's irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
Yeah. Yes.
And I would even go as far as search. I mean, certainly Google has done a wonderful job of monetizing the search and being able to drive a lot of revenue. But I don't know that I believe that Google has gotten to own the internet space just because they own search. I was frankly surprised that a platform like a Facebook would be as dominant as it turned out to be, or that a single handset, in the case of the iPhone, could become such a dominant platform that everything else has to flow through it. So the ultimate businesses that will win in this conversion, in this transition to the AI first world, is unknown. I even have doubts if OpenAI, which is clearly the leader here, which is clearly doing tremendously exciting things, I'm not even positive that they're going to be a massive commercial success. Because there's a real concern, not I don't want to say concern, but there is a real potential that what they're doing becomes commodity very quickly.
And how do you monetize? Those are my questions for you. Is there something I should have asked?
No, I enjoyed the conversation very, very much. I think I want the audience to tell me, again, the same question that we just talked about. What should our kids do? My daughter is 16 and I'm trying to give her some guidance on what to study. And I have to tell you, I'm stuck.
Well, I will leave you then with a quote again from Bill Davidow. We should never forget
that human beings are extraordinary creatures, brave, endlessly creative, adaptive, and born survivors. Over the course of the last million years, we have gotten through much worse.
Chun Tang of Berkeley Skydeck with cameos from legendary venture capitalist Bill David Au. If you're interested in hearing Bill's take on the future of AI and automation, that Sandhill Road episode is called People of Zero Economic Value. If you're interested in more information about Berkeley Skydeck, look for the episode called Berkeley Skydeck in past episodes. Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.